What's going on, everyone? Welcome to One Man's Opinion Podcast. I am your host, Noah Gillian. So happy you decided to join in today. It is the 30th of November 2020 when we're recording this episode. So happy, had a good Thanksgiving. Thankful for my family around me. Hopefully you guys all did the same. Some topics we're going to discuss today on the episode. Of course, we're going to recap NFL Week 12. I also wanted to dive into the NBA a little bit now that free agency has kind of calmed down a little bit. A lot more rotations are starting to be thinned out, crystallized, so we can kind of start to gauge how teams are going to look come opening day. And of course, we're always going to visit the betting corner. Got a brand new segment for you today. Hopefully you guys enjoy. And without further ado, let's jump into our first topic. Topic number one today, NFL Week 12. Now, this is being recorded on Monday, November 30th. So we wanted to give a little Eagles preview for Monday Night Football. Eagles hosting Seattle tonight. Seattle opened at 3-point favorites and have since skyrocketed to at least -6 last time I checked. And, you know, with the recent history Seattle's had against Philadelphia, I don't blame the odds makers or the sharp money for making that line move that much. First topic, though, I wanted to get into about the game and what I think is going to, you know, decide a lot for Philadelphia is the offensive line reshuffling. Jordan Mailata will take over at left tackle, moving Jason Peters over to right guard, which I think has been a long time coming, honestly, for Philadelphia. Jason Peters can't move as well as he has, and he wasn't the solution this year at left tackle. And for a Philadelphia Eagles team that's 3-6-1 heading into a matchup with Seattle and then Green Bay next week and then New Orleans the week after, you really need to see what you have with Mailata, because a physical specimen at 6'7", over 300 pounds, who can move really well, is something you need to check out. And I think he could be a viable option at left tackle long term. Obviously, that is without getting to see Andre Dillard back next year. We will see how that works out. But I'm also really excited to kind of see Jason Peters at right guard, his first game at right guard, and what that is going to look like. He's been dealing with a turf toe injury. Seems like every single week it's something new, but dealing with turf toe injury, he should be available to play for the Eagles tonight. So our 10th different starting lineup at the offensive line grouping, with Mailata at left tackle, Isaac Seumalo back at left guard. Obviously, Jason Kelce, the Warrior, even though he hurt his elbow last week, will be starting at center for us. And then Jason Peters at right guard. And I believe we're trotting out there Jack Driscoll at right tackle, because we got the news this week that Lane Johnson will be out for the remainder of the year to nurse his ankle, which has been plaguing him all year. Hasn't, you know, messed with his play often. He only allowed 2 sacks this season. So, you know, he's still been playing well. And what we've seen from Carson Wentz without Lane Johnson has been a different quarterback. You know, something that really, you know, alters his thinking and alters his, you know, feel in the pocket, which has been altered this year already. So it's going to be very interesting to see how he looks in the pocket with this new offensive line. But like I said, my favorite thing that happened is Mailata at left tackle. I really think that's going to be strong. He hasn't been great all year. I'm not going to say he's been, you know, he's going to be a future Hall of Famer, but he's shown signs of really being a good lineman. And this project that we took a shot on, you know, might pay off down the line. Another thing that I think is going to impact this game is Seattle's defensive resurgence. Earlier in the year, Seattle was giving up yards at a record pace and was really looking like one of the worst defenses this league has ever seen. And it you wouldn't think that with a Pete Carroll defense and, you know, just Seattle. You think, when you think of Seattle, the last, you know, what, a decade, you think of defense first. You think of Russell Wilson and that strong defense, strong running game. But that defense, Legion of Boom, is something you always think about with Seattle. So having them with such a bad defense, it doesn't make sense, honestly. So that's kind of been one thing I've been looking out for all year. I really wanted to see what Pete Carroll would do to the defense, because obviously he's a defensive head coach, So he couldn't be happy with what he's going out on the field. Obviously, the offense was performing poorly. I'm sure he wouldn't be happy either. But being a strong defensive coach, I really think that rubbed him the wrong way. However, reinforcements were on the way. Jamal Adams, who was hurt during a portion of the season, who they acquired from the Jets this year, and the addition of Carlos Dunlap on the defensive line for Seattle. Both of those moves have really changed the way Seattle's played defensively. Because, you know, I was watching the Herd had Howard Cosell on, or Greg Cosell on, excuse me. And, you know, he really said that Jamal Adams was a glorified linebacker. And when you watch Seattle play and you watch Jamal Adams play, he is in the box a ridiculous amount. And he is absolutely amazing at it. When he plays safety, he obviously he's good, but he's not as good as when he's down in the box. So you add him and you add Carlos Dunlap to a defensive line that has been struggling to rush the passer all year. And that really is going to help Seattle's secondary, who has been, like I said, the worst in the league this year. So I think those two additions, along with Pete Carroll's scheming, is really going to help them continue to get better. Since both of them have come back into the lineup, Seattle's defense has taken leaps and bounds, has been leaps and bounds better than they were to start the year. And, you know, as an Eagles fan, you're thinking, you know, great, we have Seattle, their defense has sucked all year, you know, this is just what we need. And I'm sitting over here like, Seattle's beaten us four times in a row, their defense is getting better, Doug's not calling great plays right now, Carson's not playing great right now. I don't know. It's going to have to be, a lot of it's going to be on Jim Schwartz tonight, because I think the defense is going to need to be keeping the Eagles in the game. I think the offense is going to find some things out, but I'm very, very anxious to see what happens with that Seattle defense, because, like I said, Carlos Dunlap and Jamal Adams both are very, very good players, and the additions onto that defense has really raised the overall unit's level of play. Another story that broke a couple days ago was that the Eagles were giving Jalen Hurts a lot of first-team reps at practice this week. And that led to the report that he would be seeing a lot more field time today with no Carson Wentz on the field. Usually when they bring Jalen Hurts in for his package, he's under center and they'll split Carson out wide. But from all the reports today, in the last couple of days, Jalen's going to get a lot more opportunity tonight. And I just hope all of you are happy, because everyone has single-handedly bullied this franchise into playing Jalen Hurts, and it's the GM who is trying to save his own skin, and the GM who is trying to make himself look better by playing his second-round quarterback that he took over their franchise quarterback just to prove that that was not a bad draft pick. And, you know, anyone that knows me knows I am not happy when Jalen Hurts steps on the field, because when you pay your quarterback $120 million, one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the league, you want him on the field every single play, regardless of injury, right? Carson Wentz, biggest knock, everyone said, oh, he can't stay healthy. Well, you know, Deshaun Watson's missed more games since Carson came into the league and since, you know, Deshaun's been in the league. So, you know, I don't really want to hear that anymore. And now it's all about just his play, which I'm going to take a back seat because he's not playing well. So I understand that. But you're going to bring in your backup quarterback for what? What's he going to get? Is he going to get a series? Is he going to get two series? Is he going to come in for, what, two plays, and then Carson's got to come in on 3rd and 11 and try to make a play? I just don't understand what they hope to achieve. You know, you're shattering your quarterback's confidence. He's already got to look at a statue of Nick Foles, his backup from 2017, every day he walks into the link. And now you're going to give his backup reps during the game when he's not even hurt? I don't know. Like I said, I'm very interested to see how it works out, and I'm very interested to see what goes on. What's up, Kona? dog just joined the podcast for anyone that knows. Kona, the Golden Retriever. Welcome to the pod, Cone. First guest on the One Man's Opinion podcast. All right, as we move on to the next segment of the Monday night preview, Philadelphia's struggle versus mobile quarterbacks. We've seen Daniel Jones absolutely shred the Eagles' defense, and we've also seen Joe Burrow get out and make some things happen. You haven't ran into too many of the Eagles, defense playing too many of mobile quarterbacks, but coming up, we got Russell Wilson, we got Aaron Rodgers, we got Taysom Hill, more than likely, and then we have Kyler Murray. So, the Eagles' inability to guard the read option and the designed runs is going to be very interesting to see. That's going to be one matchup I'm really looking forward to tonight is Russell's rushing ability and also how that marries with the play action. And just to see if our defense can be disciplined tonight, because last time, we played Seattle, we only gave up 17 points, but Russell was extending plays on third down with his legs and doing a lot to frustrate Jim Schwartz and our defense. And I think that's going to be very, very important to watch tonight and a very big key to the Eagles tonight. And if Russell Wilson runs wild, I think the Eagles have absolutely no shot. The Eagles need to contain Russell Wilson and make him a pocket passer, which he has shown to be an all-time pocket passer. But when you add his legs in, he becomes a whole nother animal. So we need to at least take away one of his options and, try to make him beat us through the air, which he is going to do most likely. But, I want to see Darius Slay earn his money tonight. That's another thing for me. I really want to see Darius Slay against DK Metcalf and against Tyler Lockett, wherever he lines up. And I want to see him earn his money tonight because he's been playing great all year. But this game, Monday Night Football against DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, and Russell Wilson, this is why we bring in Darius Slay. And this is where I want to see him earn his money tonight. Overall, prediction for the game. I think the Eagles are more competitive than they've showed the last couple weeks. I think they play up and down to their competition. So, when we play the Bengals, we're loose. We think we're going to win. We tie them. Unbelievable. And, not saying the Giants are a worse team than us right now, because I honestly think they're a better team. But I also kind of think the Eagles walked into MetLife assuming we were going to win and straight up did not. And I also think the Browns are a little bit overrated. So I think we kind of went in there thinking we had a really, really good chance to win and that we might be a better team and just got, embarrassed, for lack of a better word. So I think Seattle playing well is going to make us play better. I think Doug will be more locked in with a game plan. And I think Carson is going to have a good game overall. I don't think it's going to matter, though. I think Eagles lose 30-24 and Russell Wilson has a good game. I think Carson has a good game. I'm really looking for Miles Sanders tonight. I think another key for the Eagles is getting Miles Sanders going. But we'll see. That's my prediction, 30-24. Seahawks, unfortunately, does go for a push, though. So we will see what happens. All right, moving on to some of the other action from Week 12. Starting with some of the fantasy stars of the game. And where else to go but Tyreek Hill. 13 catches, 269 yards, and 3 touchdowns. That's a nice stat line. That is the 7th most PPR fantasy points ever in a single game. Tyreek Hill absolutely torched the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And this is what you get when you draft Tyreek Hill. These kind of games are possible. Obviously, he hasn't had a game quite like this, but you're expecting more a game like last week against the Raiders. He had 11 for 100 and a touchdown or something like that. He can have those explosive games, but now that these games can also happen. 13 for 269 and 3. I mean, holy moly. There's just no one on Tampa Bay that could cover him yesterday. Absolutely no one. That kind of leads us into Patrick Mahomes, 462 yards, 3 touchdowns. I mean, what else do you want me to say? I talked about him last week. We'll get into him in a little bit, in a few minutes, but just an absolutely great statistical game for Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. Also, Derrick Henry, 27 carries, 178 yards, and 3 touchdowns. And you're thinking, wow, that's a really, really great game. That's a really, really great game for a full 60 minutes. Well, most of that came in the first half, which was absolutely bonkers. All three touchdowns came in the first half. I believe at least 125 of those yards came in the first half, and he just absolutely dominated. The Colts could not do anything to stop him. No DeForest Buckner on the Colts defensive line really hurt them, and Derrick Henry, workhorse. As the year gets on, he starts to get better, so anyone with Derrick Henry is just going to be so happy. Derrick Henry has one of the top five strengths of schedule for a running back in fantasy football, so expect more of the same. Maybe not quite to this degree, 178-3, but something in that neighborhood, at least 100 yards he's going to be getting, and as good a touchdown as anyone else there is in the league. All right, Will Fuller and Antonio Gibson, two darlings from the Thanksgiving slated game. Will Fuller from the early game, 6 for 172 and two touchdowns. And Antonio Gibson, 20 carries for 110 yards and three touchdowns. Both of them absolutely helped their fantasy managers out huge. Got them out to early leads, especially in week 12. I know a lot of leagues, this is the last week before the playoffs or the second to last week before the playoffs. So this is really where you need your studs to step up and your supporting guys. And both of them did that for their teams. And, you know, Will Fuller is in a contract year, going into free agency this year, made himself a whole lot of money this year. And Antonio Gibson, on the other hand, is going to be someone I'll be very high on next draft season. I'm kind of invested in the football team. I think they have a bright future. Terry McLaurin is a stud. I think Antonio Gibson is a stud. So Gibson will be a high riser, at least a top 15 back for me next year, especially in PPR. Just an absolute stud, and that goes for Will Fuller as well. Just wanted to give a quick shout out to James Robinson. I mean, absolutely, what a story. You know, undrafted, goes to Jacksonville, and they have some injuries, and they're running back some COVID issues, and James Robinson steps in and has been the workhorse. He's been Derrick Henry light, and I think there's, you know, no argument you can be had for that. 22 and 128 and 1 against the Browns yesterday, and he's been doing this all year. You know, you have Derrick Henry and Dalvin Cook rushing-wise who have been in a league of their own, but then number three on that list is James Robinson, third most rushing yards in the league this year from an undrafted player, getting serious Philip Lindsay vibes, but from a bigger body back who's got speed, and I think he's going to be really good next year too. If they give him carries, I think he's proven and earned the right to be the workhorse next year as well. I just wanted to give a shout out to James Robinson. Not an explosive game, 128-1. You're definitely not mad at it. But I just really wanted to give him a shout out for everything he's done. And can't wait to see what he's doing in the future. All right, I wanted to touch on one game before we moved into our second topic. Just the Kansas City-Tampa Bay matchup, with Kansas City winning 27-24. It looked as if Kansas City was going to run away with this game. As I already mentioned, Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill came out swinging. Tyreek Hill had 200 yards and two touchdowns in the first quarter. Yes, in the first quarter. And, you know, they really never looked back. But then, you know, that number 12's over on the other sideline. He brought him back, ended up being 27-24. Kansas City has the ball, and I just love to see this. Andy Reid trusts his quarterback so much, and when you have Patrick Mahomes, it's a lot easier to do that, but just the trust Andy Reid shows. Second and third down, they throw it both times. You know, Tampa Bay has no timeouts. All they need is one first down. You can run it. You know, you run it twice, you drain it down to 30, you punt. You know, you only give Tom 30 seconds. No. Andy said, I'm going to run one out to the flat, we're going to catch it, stay in bounds, and then we're going to run a beautiful rollout play to the left, where Mahomes slices through the line almost a little, thinking he's going to run, take a sack, maybe keep the clock running, and then just fires a dart to Tyreek Hill on the sideline, sits down inbounds, clock runs out. You know, I joke with my one friend TQ about the Pittsburgh Steelers being undefeated. You know, we'll see them Tuesday night against Baltimore, but I don't see them being in Kansas City. I know their defense is great and everything, but Patrick Mahomes is absolutely on another level, and I cannot wait to see him in the playoffs. like I mentioned on the last episode, I would really like to see Pittsburgh and Kansas City go head to head, but you know, I'd have to take Kansas City in that game, because just from what I saw, Tampa Bay's defense is no slouch. They are right there with the Steelers. Not quite there with the Steelers, but they are right behind the Steelers in a lot of categories and just personnel. And Patrick Mahomes just sliced them up. I mean, they got up so big that they got a little bit more conservative in the second half. So, I mean, Patrick Mahomes could have thrown for north of 500 yards in this game, but, you know, they didn't need to. So, I'm just really anticipating that matchup. I think that's what we're going to get in the AFC Championship game. But, you know, then again, we'll see. I really like Kansas City, and that game yesterday just, it really proved it for me and kind of cemented the Chiefs in my mind as Super Bowl favorites. All right, on to our second topic. Let's get into the NBA and a little training camp preview. So first, what I kind of wanted to do was just go over the playoff teams from last year and kind of give what I think the playoff bracket is going to look like next year. You know, in the East, I don't think there's going to be much change in terms of, you know, the overall field. So last year we had Milwaukee, Toronto, Boston, Indiana, Miami, Philly, Brooklyn, and Orlando as our 8 playoff teams in the East. And while some of the contenders have made some changes and made some additions, you know, most of the teams that didn't make the playoffs made a majority of the upgrades in the East. But for those playoff teams, you know, I think the top 7 stay in the playoffs. That's the Bucks, Raptors, Celtics, Pacers, Heat, Sixers, and the Nets. I think those 7 are pretty much going to be locked in. And with the 8 seed Magic, I'm going to say they don't make the playoffs this year. And I might surprise some people, but I think the Atlanta Hawks will make the jump and fight for that 8 seed and end up getting it. You know, I really, really like their additions they made this year. Bogdanovich signing up with the squad. The Kings declined to match the offer. The addition of Danilo Gallinari. Technically, the addition of Clint Capella as well, because he didn't play a single second for him last year after they traded for him. And then also some of the bench depth they got with Rajon Rondo. I really, really like Chris Dunn. Both of who are high-level defenders who can maybe help Trae Young learn some tricks where he can be serviceable, kind of like Steph Curry, who wasn't a good defensive player early in his career, but turned into an adequate defender and a good team defender. I think that's what Trae needs to shoot for to be a very, very good overall player. So we'll see what happens there, but I think the Hawks are going to take that step into the 8 seed, and I'm really, really excited to see how they play because, you know, with the additions of those scorers, Bogdanovich and Gallinari, you have players who can create but can also spot up and shoot when Trae Young inevitably brings the ball up and makes moves. But at the same time, you can put Trae off the ball and have him run screens, much like Steph Curry. I said last week on the pod that I think Trae Young is in that Steph Curry build, and I think the one next step he needs to make is move more off the ball. So if he comes down, makes a couple moves, get a screen, maybe dish it to that screener, run off 2 screens, come off. He's as good a shooter as there is in the league. So if he masters that moving off the ball, coming off screens, it's going to open everything up for everybody. And then when you have scorers like Bogdanovich, Gallinari, you have good shooters like Kevin Huerter coming off the bench, Cam Reddish, I'm anxious to see how he looks in his second year. You know, DeAndre Hunter, they spent a top 5 pick last year. It's really just going to open the floor up for everybody else. So I'm very, very excited to see that. And then also the Clint Capella addition, just anchoring in the defense, is really going to be something I think is going to change the whole outlook for their season. They were terrible defensively last year. So I'm very, very anxious to see how they look. But I think it's going to be good. I think they take the 8th seed in the East. Moving on to the West, you know, I think last year it was the Lakers, Clippers, Nuggets, Rockets, Thunder, Jazz, Mavericks, and the Portland Trailblazers in the playoffs fight for the 8 seed last year. There was about 5 teams that could have made it, 6 teams that could have made it in the bubble. But Portland ended up winning pretty much on the back of Damian Lillard. And, you know, people, you know, I might get some backlash here, but I think two teams that are going to fall out of the playoffs are the Oklahoma City Thunder. That one I think is a little less controversial just because they kind of have been going for a full rebuild. Not tearing it all the way down because they still have some really good players, but, you know, I think they're going to fall out of the playoff picture. And then the other team, I don't think the Houston Rockets are going to make the playoffs this year. I don't. I'm sorry. I've been a Rockets hater. For those of you that know me, know I'm a Rockets hater, but this is not my own personal vendetta towards the team this time. I really do think the Rockets are going to blow up their team, either trade Harden or Westbrook. And if you, Harden more so than Westbrook, but if one of them gets traded, they're going to fall off a map because their team is so built around James Harden. If they do move James Harden to the Nets, let's say, or something, or if they just move Russell Westbrook, I don't, there's not enough talent there to sustain, you know, a very, very good team. If they do move Russell and keep James, I'll give them a good chance. I think they have a good chance to make the playoffs, but I'm going to get into two teams that I do think are going to make the playoffs here, and, you know, we can have a discussion about this. Phoenix Suns. You pick up Chris Paul and Jay Crowder to add to your starting lineup. I absolutely love that move. I think the Suns jump into the playoffs, and then let's not forget the Golden State Warriors. They will be fighting for a playoff spot, and I think they do get a playoff spot. So, you know, when you're starting to look at teams who might fall out, I like the Blazers. I really like what they did in the offseason. I think they're going to stay in their playoff spot. I like the Mavericks. I think they're going to stay in the playoff spot. And I like Utah, and I think they're going to stay in a playoff spot. And I think the Lakers, Clippers, and Nuggets are in a tier of their own right now. So that leaves me with the Rockets and Thunder. And I think the Suns and Warriors are going to hop in, and it's going to be very, very interesting to see. But that's just that's how I kind of see it breaking down. But, you know, kind of going off that, I wanted to talk and touch about a few of my favorite projected lineups. And my favorite one I mentioned already, the Suns, picking up CP3 and Jay Crowder. I think that's, it's just going to do leaps and bounds for their team, not only defensively, which I think is the biggest thing, but Chris Paul showed last year he can be a leader and absolutely rally men. And I think he's going to be good for Devin Booker because he's really going to allow him to grow into that alpha and let him take that next step. And Chris Paul is at a point in his career where he knows he's the second option, but he's going to do so well with Devin Booker. I'm just so excited to watch Phoenix this year. And I think with Monty Williams, their coach, I think it's going to be, you know, a home run for them. I also like the Hawks. I've already mentioned kind of gone into that a lot, so I'm not going to harp on it too much, but I do just think their defense is going to get a lot better. They have a lot more wings, a lot more shooting, so I really think they're going to take the next step. Also, the Lakers, I mean, they're going to be great again, but with the addition of Dennis Schroeder, Marcus Gasol, Wesley Matthews, Montrezl Harrell, I think they really retooled in a way that has them sitting pretty for a repeat. And LeBron James is going to try his best to chase down Michael Jordan in six. And I think that with the changes they made and with the newfound confidence that Anthony Davis has winning a championship, I think that it's just going to do so much for him. And LeBron might even be able to take more of a backseat to start the year. And I think that's going to be really good for him. And I think they have a great lineup. You know, I really like the Schroeder addition and the Gasol addition because Gasol can shoot. He can move around. He can pass well. He can let Anthony Davis go in to the paint and work down there. And I just think it was really good for them. Also, I kind of touched on this a little bit, the Portland Trail Blazers. I loved what they did. Picking up Robert Covington, who is a switchable wing, who can shoot very well, was playing the five for Houston last year. Caveat, that was Houston. You know, they played small. I'll let it be. Also, Rodney Hood. Getting him back from the injury, I think he's a very good scorer and wing, long, wiry, athletic, could be really good for them. And I think just the depth of Hood and Covington, allowing guys like Gary Trent Jr., who I love a lot, and Melo coming off the bench, focus on scoring, you know, I really think that's going to help them a lot. And then also the addition of Enes Kanter. You know, we saw Nurkic miss a little bit of time with a leg injury, so I think picking up Enes Kanter as someone who could maybe have some spot starts in an injury situation, helps them a lot. Someone who can come off the bench and get buckets. That's what I think one thing they struggled with last year was when Dame and specifically when one was on the court and one was off in regards to Dame and CJ, you know, the offense really seemed to get stagnant. More so with CJ on the court without Dame, because Damian Lillard is a top two, you know, point guard in the league, and I think he's just absolutely unbelievable, a top 10 overall player. And when you add, you know, those kind of rangy athletes and those, you know, scorers, and you can bring them off the bench, I think that changes the way your rotation can run. Because then when you, you know, take Dame off the court and you put someone like Anthony Simons on the court, or you put Gary Trent Jr., and you have, let's say you have Trent, Hood, and Covington, you know, three shooters around CJ who likes to work in the mid-range, likes to break people down with a bunch of moves, it's just going to give him so much more room. Because when you're relying on guys like Mo Harkless and, you know, guys like that who they've had in the past, Al-Farouq Aminu, you don't have that room to, you know, break people down and get shots off. So I really like what they did, and I think they're going to hold on to a playoff spot with those moves. I also kind of talked about this last week, but the Philadelphia 76ers adding Seth Curry and Danny Green to their lineup, it's just going to help Ben Simmons so much. And also the addition of Maxey, the rookie, which was a great pick, I believe. And also Dwight to back up Joel. I'll talk about the shooting first, because I think Seth Curry and Danny Green, and also their draft pick they got from Arkansas, I think all of those guys together are going to provide a good scoring and shooting punch for the Sixers that so much lacked it last year. Anyone that watched the team saw how, you know, rough they were, you know, just sustaining leads, because, you know, they got out to more leads than a lot of people realized, 15, 20-point leads. But, you know, when your stars start coming off the court, or, you know, offense starts getting a little stagnant, that's when it started to fall apart for the team. But I also like the Maxey pickup, and I think when Ben goes to the bench and Maxey comes in, you are losing a lot defensively, but I think offensively, Maxey has a lot of tools that you like. And he can run a lot of pick and rolls with Joel, I believe, and could be a true scorer down the stretch. And I think he's going to get more and more minutes as the season goes on. I know Doc doesn't traditionally play rookies a ton, which is going to be a hurdle for him. But if he shows out in practice, Doc's going to have a tough time keeping him on the bench. And I think the most underrated move for the Sixers was Dwight Howard, just providing that defense off the bench. Because when Joel goes off the bench or off the court, anyone that's watched the Sixers since Joel's been on the team has seen just an absolute falling apart, just an absolute destruction of their team defense, honestly. And I think Dwight Howard is going to be a good anchor in there to sustain leads for the Sixers, and at least not blow, you know, 15-point leads when Joel comes off the court. Next time he checks in, it might only be a 3 or 4 point lead. So I think Dwight is going to do a really good job with the bench defense. And along with year two, Matisse Thybulle, it's going to be really interesting to see. So I can't wait to see how they look. And also, I'm just going to do an honorable mention, the Nets. I mean, how can you not mention the Nets with the addition, technically, of Kevin Durant? And also Kyrie Irving back to the lineup. You're looking at a lineup with Irving, Joe Harris, who I absolutely love, Caris LeVert, Kevin Durant, and Jarrett Allen. I think that's a very, very good starting five that is going to compete in the East for a top three seed. And, you know, when you add Kevin Durant to any team, they're going to get better. So I don't really care what people are saying about the Nets and his injury, and I don't know how he's going to look. Kevin Durant's going to be absolutely fine, and the Nets are going to be fine. So I'm very anxious to see them. I just wanted to include them on the list, because anytime you add a top two player on planet Earth, you know, you got better. Let's just leave it at that. So my overall outlook for the NBA season, I'm really excited to see, you know, how it looks with COVID and how it looks with fans in the stands, but overall just kind of no bubble and how they're going to do with that. You know, are teams that didn't have much roster turnover going to be better, let's say, early in the season than teams who made a lot of moves? Is that cohesiveness going to be a big factor? You know, with Doc Rivers coming over for the Sixers, a lot of teams changing coaches. Is that going to be something that holds some teams back? Another storyline I'm looking at is you know, the Heat and the Lakers, how much their stars rest and how much their stars take it easy early. Because, you know, you look at the quote unquote delete eight who didn't make the bubble. They've had almost 250 days since they've laced them up and gotten on the court, whereas, you know, the Lakers and the Heat are, you know, off a couple months. So I'm really anxious to see how that looks, and I'm really excited. I think, you know, just the NBA being back, I'm just so excited, and I cannot wait for basketball. We've gotten a little taste with college basketball. We'll talk about some college basketball on future episodes, but yeah, I just can't wait for the NBA to be back. It's just such, it's such a gift, and, you know, anyone that watches the NBA, you know, we're in such a good place with all the talent and all the, you know, the young men in the league. I love it, and I cannot wait to see how it looks, especially with all the reshuffling of lineups. You know, like I said, I just can't wait, and, you know, December 22nd can't come soon enough. And, you know, we'll see. I'll put out some predictions in the coming pods about who I award finalists and, you know, overall winners, you know, championship, conference, division, all that stuff. So we'll get to that in a few pods. But for my overall outlook, I'm just very excited and can't wait for it to get back. All right, on to everyone's favorite segment, topic number three, the betting corner. Rough one last week. You know, the Rams came out and just abused the Bucks. The Bucks haven't, I mean, you know, new quarterback, obviously Tom Brady wants to put his system in. You have Bruce Arians, so they're going to be very volatile week to week. So I think I'm going to stay away from the Bucks for a little bit, just for this season. I think next season they'll look a lot better, and we'll have a better grasp of, you know, their consistency week to week. But I think, overall, I'm going to stay away because Sean McVay and Jared Goff went in there and absolutely tore them apart. Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods went off, and it was a bad bet. I'll take it. 0-1. You know what? We'll bounce back. There's nowhere to go but up from here. Whoa. All right, so you know what? We talked about it already. New segment. Our special guest here with us today, Kona. Kona's underdog of the week. Yes, you heard that right. So when I looked at the look-ahead lines, I kind of looked before some of the games happened, and I pinpointed three games that, lines kind of jumped out at me, and we'll see, I like these games. So the first one we'll talk about, Washington plus 10.5 at Pittsburgh. You guys have heard me now. I've been anticipating a letdown from Pittsburgh, and I think a team like Washington, who has Alex Smith, who understands ball control, and a running back like Antonio Gibson, who's running as well as he has all year, and a defense like Washington, I think has the recipe to keep it close. While I do think Pittsburgh wins, I think it's, you know, within 10 points, definitely. That extra hook on the half point is crucial for me. Another game I like is the New York G-Men plus 7.5 at Seattle. On the look-ahead line, the hook is everything for me here, the 7.5. I do think Seattle wins by a touchdown, but I do think the Giants keep it close. They've won three straight, and you know, I really like that number. Also, I think probably my second favorite, if I had to rank them, I'd go Washington plus 10.5, one, and then the G-Men would be number three on my list at plus 7.5. And I think my second bet on that list would be the Houston Texans plus 3.5 versus the Colts. This really depends on DeForest Buckner. If he misses the game, I love this line. It's already moved down to 3. As of this morning, so I don't love that as much, but I like how the Texans are playing. I like Deshaun Watson, how he's playing, and I think they have, you know, as good a chance as any. They're home versus the Colts, division game, so, you know, I think they have a really, really good chance to upset. I think they have a good chance to win outright, but I'll take the 3.5 with the hook. All right, everyone, that's going to wrap it up. Just to put a bow on the show, please hit that subscribe button if you enjoyed what we talked about today. If you want to follow us on social media, check the description below. I hope you all enjoyed. I can't wait to see you back here again next time. I'm your host, Noah Gillian, but hey, this is just one man's opinion.